parsha. There is a funny sefer, a funny sefer, yeah, a little bit of a funny sefer called Va'alahu Lo Yibol. Anyone ever heard of it? It's a sefer of a big Talmud Chacham. They used to follow Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach around. He used to walk him different places, and he would write down everything, every last word that Rav Shlomo Zalman said in these conversations. So there's a lot of valuable stuff there, but it's also a little bit funny because he writes every offhanded comment that Rav Shlomo Zalman said, like "Watch out for the bus over there," you know, like anything that Rav Shlomo Zalman said, or like, you know, "Gut vach," you know, like, okay, you know, as he said, you know, like in the middle of the conversation as people were passing by, to each person, "Gut vach, gut vach," and then Rav Shlomo Zalman said, "Nistam, it's gut vach, mutter," you know, like it's meaning he was trying to show that he was very, very precise and very loyal to everything that he said. So that's, you know, a little bit funny for any sefer. But you would imagine, this is just an introduction, you would imagine that in the Chumash, we wouldn't have stuff like that. Just like throwaway lines, just little things that don't really, that aren't really part of the core conversation, that aren't really part of, you know, some sort of critical message. It's an unconventional way to write a book at all, but certainly one would expect different from the Torah. And here we have Yaakov Avinu imparting his final message to each of his children, and he seems to throw in some sort of offhanded comment that doesn't fit the rest of the theme of the brachos that he's giving his children. Because immediately after blessing done, and right before blessing God, he says, Lishchos k'kvisi Hashem. Where did that come from? Was there something else going on in the at the time? So it's not only unusual in that it doesn't seem to be part of either the bracha that precedes it, or nor does it seem to be part of the bracha that follows it, but also because it's very structured, doesn't seem to fit the tone of the brachos. Aside from the first three brachos, Yaakov makes no mention of himself at all. Yaakov, in this pasuk, Yaakov refers to his own quest for salvation. Like, what does it have to do with the brachos? It's also strange that this is the only place in all of the brachos that Hashem is actually mentioned, which is stav interesting. You know, you would think that every bracha is would start with Yivarech Hashem or something of that nature. But what was it about this point in the brachos that prompted Yaakov to mention our need for the Yeshua of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So there are two approaches, and perhaps a hybrid approach. Two approaches are as follows. Rashi assumes that the pasuk refers back to the bracha given to Dan, but specifically addresses a single son of Dan who will make his mark on Jewish history, Shimshon HaGibor. In fact, Rashi reads the entire bracha given to Dan as a veiled reference to Shimshon, which is astonishing, meaning you're being mevarich this whole shevet, and the whole bracha is about one person that's going to emerge from this shevet. Apparently, Shimshon, in Rashi's view, is symbolic of the shevet. You would think Dan is symbolic of the shevet, but apparently Shimshon is the paradigm of the shevet and the strengths and weaknesses of the shevet. And that pasuk refers to Shimshon's cry out to Hashem in his last moments of life as he heroically brings down all of these plushtin with him, you know, Zachrenina v'chaskenina achapam hazeha elokim, right? That's his version of Lishuas Chakivisi Hashem. That's Shimshon Agibor's version when he brings down the whole room, bringing the house down, a different, you know. Anyway, so Rashbam says that it's impossible. It's impossible to believe that Yaakov's emphasis would be about a single member of the Shevet. It's too narrow. He suggests that the message is for the entire Shevet in their role as the tribe that traveled in the back of the camp and often had to defend the camp from enemy attacks. Dan, of all the Shvatim, was the most vulnerable to being hurt by an enemy attack, and Yaakov was blessing them that Hashem should save them. So you have Rashi saying it's about Dan, but not about Dan, about Shimshon and his last act of heroism and his various strengths and weaknesses. And you have the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, telling us that no, it's not about Shimshon per se, it's about the entire Shevet of Dan, but particularly their role as the most vulnerable of all of Klal Yisrael, because they're all the way in the back where they're the most vulnerable for attack and no one would even see them. Others understand that no, it's not about Dan at all, it's about God. Yaakov is foreshadowing a troubling conversation that God will one day have with Moshe Rabbeinu, that they're going to approach Moshe Rabbeinu prior to entering Israel, and they're going to ask for permission to remain Be'ever Yarden. They're going to want to stay on the other side of the Yarden. And in their request, they don't mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Moshe's response to them, he mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu 6 times. Right? They make a request, you know, we'd like to stay here. And Moshe Rabbeinu, in responding to them, mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu no less than 6 times. So Yaakov is telling God, don't ever forget that the battles that they fight are not their own. They are the battles of Hashem. Don't ever take HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the equation. Don't ever think you're going to accomplish anything without Siyata D'Shemaya. Lishuascha Kivisi Hashem is a message to Shevet God, because Shevet God falls short in remembering that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is part of everything at a certain point in history. So these are the 3 mahalchim that you seem to have. That it's about Shevet Dan, but not all of Shevet Dan is about Shimshon. It's about Shevet Dan, but specifically Shevet Dan's role as the back of the camp. And about Shevet Gad, and specifically referring to their willingness to make a request which is life-altering for their entire Shevet, and yet doesn't even mention the Ribbono Shel Olam. Perhaps, Elu ve'elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim, meaning Yaakov specifically placed this statement in between these 2 brachos to emphasize that those who are most likely to feel alone or independent should recognize that Hashem is always with us. Meaning that all 3 of these are true because all 3 emphasize a certain sense of aloneness, loneliness, or independence, right? However you want to phrase it. And that's why he puts it between the 2 brachos, because it goes on Masha Lamala Himenu, Masha Lamata Himenu. It goes on both. We're never alone, and we're never really entirely independent. The loss of focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu expresses itself in 3 ways. Number 1, when a person works alone and always feels that he's going against the tide, he can feel a certain separation from the community. The representation of that, of a person who's like a lone warrior, someone who operates sort of in his own venue, in his own area, where he's not part of a team, is among Jewish leaders. There's no greater example of that than Shimshon. Yaakov compares Dan to a serpent, which goes all alone and kills many at a time, as opposed to most animals, which hunt in packs. Shimshon was largely an outcast, even among his own people, right? He had married a Plishti woman and that Plishti women, and his work was never done with an army. It was always just him doing things and killing thousands of Plishtim with animal bones and things like that. And his defining moment was not really as a leader of battalions of soldiers like David HaMelech, but really in the loneliness of being captured by the enemy. And being his heroic moment was behind enemy lines, when he was mamish all alone, when he was the only one. So that's one type of aloneness. Then you have when one feels vulnerable or forgotten, is another type of loneliness. They need to be reminded that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really with them. Dan feels lonely in the back. Every enemy shot has to go through Dan first. Those traveling in the front of the pack maybe also would have to endure enemy fire, right? If an enemy comes attacking a frontal attack, but at least everyone behind them will see it. At least everyone will be aware, right? You ever like walking with friends and like, you know, you're running ahead a little bit and then like you turn around, hey, where'd everybody go? Like, you know, you don't even necessarily, you know, he's cognizant, you're always aware of the people that are behind you. Dun could be the whole shame, it could be wiped out and no one will even see unless they turn around to see what happened. If you don't turn around, you don't even see that they're the ones bringing up the rear. It's a lonely and largely thankless existence, and it can lead to a certain sense of despair if you don't recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifts you up. There is a concern among the hanhala of Reitz, and really just leadership in Klal Yisrael, that rabbis tend to burn out quickly. that rabbis tend to retire, you know, if they can, if they can afford to, if they have any exit strategy at all, you know, in their 40s or in their 50s or whatever, just because they just can't anymore. There's just too much. The idea is that they work. Look, rabbis aren't the only ones who work long hours and have a lot of stress. Wall Street executives also, as do attorneys, and even some doctors, you know, work till they can figure out how to make it work with a more reasonable schedule. They typically, you know, can work very, very long hours, especially when they're training. What's different about rabbis is that they according to, the word out there, there's an article written about this like 10 years ago, was that they don't get enough Hakaras HaTov for what they do, which, you know, Baruch Hashem, in my position, like, I never felt that that was an issue. But there are a lot of rabbis that have that, apparently have that issue. I don't know if the way to solve that is you give shiurim to girls or women, because it's a thing that they always come over and say thank you afterwards. They could have been out cold the entire time. They'll always come over and say thank you after. So you get a karas hatov, you're not sure for what, but you know, you'll always get a karas hatov. What was most interesting to me is that there was this article going around among rabbanim. One of my rabbinic colleagues, who probably doesn't get as much a karas hatov as, you know, as I do, just based on the communities that we're in, responded to the article with an email, and he said, "My honest reaction to the article was I consider it to be a tremendous privilege to serve the Jewish community and to do Hashem's work. To me, the greatest sense of fulfillment is having Hashem be happy with what you are doing, which is worth much more than the gratitude, and will hopefully continue to push me and motivate me to be better and better at what I do." So how does he navigate himself away from the loneliness of being underappreciated? By recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates all that he does. So Yaakov's message is where Hashem is that Hashem serves as a Yeshua for those who like Shevet Dan, the Rashbam's Shevet Dan, right? The ones who are in the back, who may feel ignored. So you know, you may feel ignored by other people, but you're never ignored by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the final lesson that Yaakov taught was that one who feels that things are going very well for himself is also likely to forget that all of his success was determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and can just as easily be taken away. When Shevet Gad approaches Moshe, they're essentially asking to stay away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's country because they're perfectly happy where they are. So the need for Yeshua in those circumstances is perhaps most pressing, because when a person feels lonely, or like a Shimshon, a person feels neglected, like the back of Shevet Dan, they'll continue to search for comfort, and hopefully that eventually they'll find the right answers. But when a person feels too independent, a person feels too comfortable, too content, then they run the danger of not even looking for a solution, because they don't even realize that they have a problem. And the answer to all of it is Lishuas HaKavisi Hashem. So Yaakov gives the brachos to his children. He tries to convey the unique characteristics and kochos of each one. The point is not to dwell on the father-son relationship that he enjoyed with each of them. There's no need to mention himself or even Hashem in the context of describing which tools each of them have at their disposal in serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's only when he gets to those who may feel alone in this world, whether from a sense of despair, a sense of rejection, a sense of unhealthy confidence and pride, whatever it is that they feel alone or different, it's only there that Yaakov emphasizes both God and himself, the need to keep HaKadosh Baruch Hu in one's life and always maintain a Ribbono Shel Olam perspective. That's something that Yaakov feels is best conveyed through the personal touch and not through just a cold assessment of their character. So Yaakov gets much more personal, because that's the only way to convey Yerushamayim. See, information, assessments, and Ashkafos can be taught Yerushamayim, a sense of the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam in your life, that has to come through an emotional connection. Right, when people understand what it means to have the Ribbono Shel Olam in their lives, it's not, oh, I once learned that this is what it means. There's a personality. There's someone that you saw that conveyed that to you. You stood next to Rav Shechter davening Shmon Esrei once, and you understood what it means to have the Ribbono Shel Olam in your life. There was some example of it. There was something that you saw. It has to be done personally. So Yaakov keeps himself largely out of the brachos, but when he's trying to convey to his children that those who feel most alone have to recognize that the Ribbono Shel Olam is there, and have to live with the Ribbono Shel Olam in their lives, whether as a source of chizik, like Shevet Dan needed, or whether as a source of remaining centered, like Shevet Gad needed, he wanted to convey that through Lishuascha Kivisi Hashem, to mention himself along with the message that he was giving over. Okay.